We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, it is Thursday, December 5th, and if you're listening to the American Family Radio Network, then of course you are used to hearing my voice, but if you're listening in Houston on AM 700, this is also the Chris Salcedo Show, and we do this occasionally. Chris is a very good friend, where we do a simulcast because there's just so much to talk about that we kind of merge our shows. So, Chris, good morning.
Jenna Ellis, good morning to you. Merry Christmas to you. And you know,
Merry
what?
Merry Christmas.
You and I had a couple of court cases that we had talked offline about covering, but this information coming out of New York, I don't know if you've been following the execution, I think it's fair to say, the execution of the UnitedHealthcare CEO.
Yeah, this is just wild.
Right? And what they are finding this morning, the latest on this is they found words engraved on the shell casings used from the bullets used to kill this man. And he, this individual who was laying in wait, I guess, according to authorities, knew where this guy was going to be, the CEO. And the words on the shell casings, deny, defend, and depose. All
wow.
Legal terms. I know that that you have encountered in your legal career. What's your take on what's happened here?
You know, this story, it is just heartbreaking. And I don't know, Chris, if you've seen the video that has been posted, because there was surveillance footage. And this just assassin, it looked like a professional hit job, was lying in wait. The CEO is just walking, you know, down the middle of the street in New York at around 6:30 in the morning, and in a suit heading to his board meeting. And the assassin goes right behind him and shoots him a couple times. It looks like first in the leg and then in the chest, the back from behind, and then goes and picks up a couple of the shell casings and then just walks away. I mean, it is brutal. It is cold-hearted. But the other thing, Chris, that I don't know if you've been watching a lot of this response on mainstream media. What is even crazier to me is the response from some of these leftists that, I mean, here's the party that doesn't even favor the death penalty at all for, you know, for the people like the Atlanta murderer of Laken Riley, who's the illegal immigrant that shouldn't even been here in the first place. And yet they are applauding this, saying that because he is a rich white man, he deserved to die. I mean, there are so many facets of this story that are absolutely horrific.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because Taylor Lorenz, who is this psycho who used to work at the Washington Post, she is, according to Disclosed TV, she is being quoted as saying, "We want these executives dead." It's like, wow, okay. Now, granted, this guy, health insurance doesn't have a great reputation now because of Obamacare and how much they've sold out the public to please individuals in government. But, I mean, that should not be a death sentence. And there's another aspect of this. I don't know if you saw, there was a young man who was using tracking data from these electric bikes that are available in all of these blue cities, right?
Right.
This kid was able to map out where he believed this shooter left. And then he, the kid, was getting death threats. I'm trying to figure that out.
Well, yeah, and this is just so crazy. And so then you have, you know, the NYPD, who initially said that the suspect left on foot and then on an e-bike. And, I mean, they said that. And so this kid goes and tracks the data and just says, you know, hey, I for, kind of for fun, you know, call the data. But then this actually became relevant to this story. And then you have the NYPD that sort of walks that back because the e-bikes apparently that he was referring to, which are owned by Lyft, they came out and said, you know, hey, we've been told that our bikes weren't used. And it's like, oh, you know, okay. I mean, nobody's blaming Lyft. I mean, you know, anybody can go and just rent one of those bikes. It's not like they're saying that this was some kind of, you know, accomplice situation. But the public's reaction, and you're right. I mean, Taylor Lorenz, who then just hours later goes and actually posts a photo and the name of another healthcare giant CEO right after this. I mean, this is just absurd behavior from the left.
Well, you know what? Absurdity defines what you and I are going to be talking about today, because the left wing is the most destructive force to the United States of America that in my lifetime, certainly, what they've devolved into. Folks, we're talking to Jenna Ellis in the morning, and we're simulcasting here with the Chris Salcedo Show. So you wrote a piece on this Supreme Court case. Basically, it's the Democrats, the leftists, and the socialists in our society who want to legalize, and they're fighting at the Supreme Court to legalize what you and I and what some states have classified as child abuse, which is the castration of children. What's your take?
Yeah, this is the next iteration of the sexual revolution, because when you deny the essence of humanity, which is that we are made in God's image and God himself gives us life, gives us identity, gives us dignity, and our immutable characteristics, which include age, sex, race, those are things we can't change about ourselves, Chris. I mean, I can't change the fact that I was born to my specific parents in 1984 and I was born a woman, and I'm sorry, leftists, you can't change that. I can't change that. But once you start decoupling this whole idea of what it means to be a human from reality and from the truth of being made in God's image, then you get just, you know, 60 years later, you get to this wild notion that so-called experts and parents can determine for their minor children to life-alteringly chemically castrate them and forever alter their hormone system, their genitalia, just on the basis of their own ideology. This has no grounding in science or in fact, and it is child abuse. I mean, we have laws, Chris, against even temporary abuse of children, and the state absolutely has the power to take children away from those circumstances and from objectively abusive parents or guardians. And yet here we have the Biden administration and the ACLU actually arguing that the state of Tennessee does not have the power to come in and protect minor children from permanent physical abuse. It's absolutely absurd that the Solicitor General of the United States, with a straight face, made those arguments to the Supreme Court yesterday. The only hope that I have, and I want to get your take on it, Chris, is that at least it seemed like the majority of the court, and I'm hoping it'll be a 6-3 resounding opinion. That's my prediction, and maybe it's a hopeful guess, but that they will reject this nonsense and choose to protect children.
What's your take? I hope so. And look, I was Justice Alito, I believe it was Alito, was asking some very specific questions about what immutable was, and I didn't seem to understand all the legalese that they were having this discourse about. But basically, he basically turned the Solicitor General into knots on a couple of occasions. Alito was, I think he was talking about,
sound real quick. If we want to play this, let's play cut four. Please. This is the sound of Alito and the Solicitor General on immutable characteristics.
Does the category of does transgender status apply to individuals who are gender fluid?
I think that the distinguishing characteristic is to have a birth sex that does not align with, or a gender that does not align with one's birth sex. So it may include people who have different understandings of their gender identity, but I think it is still the distinguishing characteristic of a birth sex and a gender identity that are incongruent.
Are there individuals who are born male, assigned male at birth, who at one point identify as female, but then later come to identify as male, and likewise for individuals who are assigned female at birth, at some point identify as male, but later come to identify as female? Are there not such people?
There are such people. I agree with that, Justice.
So it's not an immutable characteristic, is it?
Well, I think people's understanding of it shifts, but the evidence shows that there is at least a strong underlying basis.
Okay, let's stop it there because we're almost out of time for this segment, and I want to go back to Chris Salcedo, and we're simulcasting. But basically what Alito is saying is, okay, we have always understood equal protection to be on the basis of an immutable characteristic, meaning something we cannot change and we didn't choose about ourselves, like our age.
Our sex. Things that were out of our control that nature provided. Yes.
Yes. And so now he's saying, okay, so is transgenderism an immutable characteristic? And he's pinning her because if she says, yes, it's immutable, then their entire worldview goes out the window because their entire point is that kids can change their gender and they identify as something different. But if she says no, then their legal argument is dismantled because now you aren't in an equal protection framework. So this was the brilliant question.
It was brilliant. And I think it really significantly undermined, if not completely destroyed, the entire argument of the Democrats and leftists and the satanic people in this, which are leftists and Democrats in this country. But so yes, I think that was perfect. And the immutable discussion was great. What people are getting really upset about today is the woman who doesn't know what a woman is, one of the most unqualified people that we have seen in government. And that's saying a lot with Barack Obama walking around. You've got Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who tried to equate genital mutilation of children and what you and I would call child abuse with interracial marriage. And this is patently absurd. And I can't believe she, and it shows me anyway, Jenna, and you have more legal expertise than me. It shows me how unqualified Justice Ketanji Brown is to sit in that chair.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, and for the person who says that she doesn't know what a woman is because she's not a biologist, doesn't she automatically disqualify herself from sitting on in judgment of a case where the very question is the definition of sex and whether that can change? If she doesn't know what a woman is, how can she possibly adjudicate this case? But it just shows, it shows that everything to the left, everything to this leftist woman is about race, and it's about racism. Because if there's any discrimination whatsoever, automatically we go back to, oh, well, isn't this like racism? No, no. This is about protecting children and saying that children have a right to intact bodies. This has nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that a man and a woman, regardless of their race, are entitled to a marriage. Now, on the basis of sex, that's the different question. It has to be a man and a woman, not a man and a man. So sex matters, but race does not. And that's what the left is completely disregarding.
And these Biden freaks tried to make the argument. And this is what really gets me. There's a couple of things that really upset me, and I'm really dialing back what I really want to say, because there are two things that get me. You attack children or you attack old people. And for me, those are, and this is, by the way, the favorite targets of the Democrat Party and the American left. But what got me was this lawyer, and of course, there was a big ballyhoo about, oh, the first transgender person to argue before the Supreme Court. It's like, okay, whatever. But she, because it was a biological she that tried to pretend to be a man, she made the case that a two-year-old can make the determination about what sex he or she wanted to be, as if you could change it, you know, medically and genetically,
and
scientifically.
As if a two-year-old is competent. But we're going to have to take a break here, and hopefully we'll be back with Chris Salcedo on the flip side. We'll see if he can stick around. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning, and we are simulcasting with the Chris Salcedo radio show out of Houston. And Chris Salcedo, to my audience, I'm sure you know him. He is an excellent Newsmax host, veteran broadcaster, podcaster, author, conservative political analyst. I mean, is there anything that Chris doesn't do? He speaks the truth and will be joining us in just a moment. Their show is still in break, and we are talking about this Supreme Court case that was at oral argument yesterday. And if you haven't listened to the argument and you're just listening to clips, go back and actually listen to this whole thing. I know it's like 2.5 hours, but it is so important for the entire context to get just how insane the leftist arguments actually were. And Chris, I think you are back now out of break in your show, and we're rejoining. So let's pick up where we left off with this moment that was just utterly illogical and evil, frankly, to say that a 2-year-old child could choose for themselves to transition their gender and permanently alter their bodies.
Now, look, there has been the argument that and they tried to make this, that there was some sort of parental rights at stake here. Now, I just want to walk folks through this, you know, maybe out of legal ease, just kind of an everyday thing. Where the government is now, leftist government, trying to insert itself between parent and child. They excel at this. Hitler did it. The Nazis did it. Left-wing extremist individuals throughout human history have tried to inject government and positions of power and authority in between parents and their children to destroy the foundation of Western civilization, destroy the nuclear family, and that's what Democrats are all about. They are destroyers of the nuclear family. That's their agenda. So let's walk through this. We have a 2-year-old, let's say it's a 2-year-old little girl, and the 2-year-old little girl who barely has any command of the English language says something along the lines of, boy, and some parent out there, and I use that term loosely because of what this action that could be taken if this is validated at a Supreme Court, this parent says, oh, my child wants to be a boy, and then starts that child on hormone blockers, which cause lasting and permanent damage, maybe starts making surgical modifications to the child because the parent is delusional, thinking that the child is at all competent or cogent enough to make a life-altering decision at 2 years old. That's the practical reality of what the left wing is setting up for us. It is legalizing child abuse, and I think it's wrong.
Absolutely. It is wrong, and it is evil.
That's just me, Jenna. I mean, I don't know about you, but...
Well, yeah, absolutely. That is 100... That's anybody rational. I mean, you don't even have to be a Christian conservative.
Lose?
You know,
did
we don't even have to be... Oh, and is Chris...
I've got her potted up, so I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Are we?
Hey,
Chris.
I thought that was us. Jenna, I'm not sure if you can hear me.
I can, Chris. Are you there?
Test 1, 2.
We will try to.
I guess we're going to have
Devin. Why don't we take him down just for the moment and then see if we can get it back up? All right. Well, I'll text Chris in the interim. I could hear you, so let's try to reconnect. All right. And you are hearing me live texting on air. But to Chris's point, and I think we'll have Devin and Adam try to reconnect with him because this conversation is so excellent. And I love Chris. And what I was responding to is that anybody, just even rational, I mean, the Bible says, and Jesus himself said, you know, to the Pharisees, you know, if you are a father, and your son asks for bread, would you give him a snake? No, even the pagans want to do well by their own children, because that's part of actual humanity, right? This is part of who we are, made in God's image, that we cannot escape from. So this, you have to absolutely, fundamentally deny what you instinctually know as a human being rationally, much less as a parent, to allow this kind of social engineering and absolute disgusting, altering, permanent damage to your child. This is evil. Anybody rational would say absolutely not. A 2-year-old or even a 12-year-old or a 17-year-old. if they can't even consent to getting a tattoo, which is a permanent mark on their body, it's just a mark. Like, I mean, you can do everything normally with you know, a little bit of ink on your skin, right? And you can't even consent to that, then why on earth would you be able to consent to a permanent physical alteration of your body? And the only answer to that is that you have to suppress the truth in unrighteousness, as Romans 1 says, suppress the truth in unrighteousness and be purposefully denying God's image in humanity, denying the Creator, denying that we are human beings made in His image and that He Himself gives us our identity and our worth and our immutable characteristics. And to Chris's earlier point as well before the break, when he was talking about this trans lawyer who's a woman, sounds like a woman even, right? But somehow has a mustache and, you know, is trying to present as a man because apparently has gone through some of this hormone therapy herself. And so, of course, was put up. This was another DEI kind of inclusion in the argument, which did not work, by the way, for their favor. Justice Thomas asked this lawyer a very just, you know, kind of simple line of questioning. For anybody who has ever practiced law or has even gone through law school like I have, a judge asking you what remedy you're seeking, that's kind of really basic. That's basically like, why are you here? What do you want from me? And generally the questions are, what is the relief that you want? And why do I have the authority as the judge to give it to you? Like, you have to cite some power that the judiciary has to actually give you the remedy that you're seeking, because judges can't just give you whatever you want, but you have to be able to articulate, why are you even here? And this trans lawyer, and I put trans in air quotes, could not even answer that very simple question. Listen to this. This is Cut 7.
If you are successful, what would your remedy be?
Your Honor, if we're successful here, the remedy would be to enjoin the state of Tennessee defendants from enforcing SB1 as applied to our individual plaintiffs.
So in practical terms, what would it be? What would you get? Wouldn't you get you would get different treatment based on sex?
In practical terms, what it would mean is that an individual like John Doe, who is receiving medical treatment to undergo a typical male puberty prior to SB1 and is now barred from doing so because his birth sex is female, could then receive that treatment as he had been doing with the consent of his parents. So his sex would no longer be the basis for the denial of the medical care that his doctors recommended and his parents consented to.
All right. So this was basically just sort of this mumbo jumbo of like basically what is the remedy? And Justice Thomas and Justice Alito were the only two justices that were asking these kind of pointed questions that thoroughly dismantled the left's case. And yet you have, and one of the most striking moments in the whole discussion for me was that even though you had Justice Kavanaugh, who was very concerned about men and women's sports and the obvious logical effects of the remedy that they are seeking, what this would imply. And you had Justice Barrett asking some good questions. Justice Gorsuch, shockingly, didn't say a single word. That's a little bit concerning to me. I don't think that he will be as ideologically off base as he was in the Bostock decision, reading into that term sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity when it comes, hopefully, to protecting kids. But he didn't say a single word. And the Chief Justice, you know, is always one of those that you're a little concerned about because he's sort of the wild card. But in the midst of all of this, you had with this woman who is presenting to the court as a man, which we all know is false, it's a fiction, the Chief Justice and Justice Barrett referred to her as Mr. Now, even if both of them end up in the correct opinion and they vote the correct way and they adjudicate this the correct way, which is that, of course, the state of Tennessee has the power to intervene and protect children from permanent bodily abuse. I mean, that's what this boils down to. This isn't actually ideological driven. This is all about not constitutionalizing a power of experts or parents to permanently damage and alter and abuse their kids. That's all that this boils down to. Even if Chief Justice Roberts and Amy Coney Barrett are on the right side, they entered into the fiction and the utter lie of the left by referring to this woman as Mr. Now, Justice Alito and Justice Thomas did not. They didn't take a stand and use female pronouns, call her Ms. or say she or her, any of that. They just simply didn't even go there. They said counsel, or they just asked their question. Didn't even go there. And I was very proud of them for not even entering into that nonsense. And I was very shocked and disappointed that specifically Amy Coney Barrett would allow the left to get away with that complete lie. Because if we even engage the left's utter depravity, their nonsensical, illogical ideology, and we don't stand up firmly in reality and for the truth, then why are we even having a conversation? If you want to debate and you come to the table not willing to rationally recognize reality, then what are we even talking about? I'm talking then with a delusional person. That's the definition of delusion, is that you don't recognize reality. I mean, there are certain things that you must fundamentally agree on in order to exchange ideas meaningfully. And this is the purpose of language, so that we can talk in concrete enough terms that the listener understands what I'm saying and that I understand what the other speaker is saying. For all of you who are listening and listen every day to this show, when we converse, you have to be able to understand the concepts that I'm saying that are grounded in reality and truth in order for there to be an actual exchange of ideas. Because it would be meaningless if I just sat up here kind of like Joe Biden, right? And was like, blah, 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 blah. That would be meaningless. It'd be utter nonsense. It'd be drivel. And you would not get any sort of meaningful understanding of anything that I'm saying. And so when we as conservatives approach these topics, it is so important, and nobody is talking about this, but to me, that was a pivotal moment that the highest court in the land, two justices, which included the Supreme Court Chief Justice of the United States, sat on that bench and participated in the delusion of the left and denied the basic reality and the factual recognition that gender is immutable by engaging the left on their own hijacked language. That is absolutely unacceptable. I think that's an impeachable offense. If you have somebody who is so willing to participate in delusion and not call them on it, then is that person actually competent to adjudicate these cases? I would say no. Because imagine if the Solicitor General or this trans lawyer, this woman, got up and said, you know, Your Honor, our argument is premised on the fact that water is not wet. And we deny that. We deny that. And our entire framework of everything that we're talking about denies just a fundamental fact that is observable, that courts in the legalese can do what they call take judicial notice. It's not something that you don't actually have to come in with your scientific expert and sit there and say, okay, here's how we can scientifically determine and prove that water is wet. We just all know that. Why? Because we live in reality. That is, and to say that today is Thursday, December 5th, I wouldn't have to prove that to a court. I could simply say, Judge, please take judicial notice of the fact that today is December 5th. That's the day on the calendar. We all recognize that we live in this 24-hour period, and this is the day that the Lord has made, by the way, and I will rejoice and be glad in it. But we don't have to prove basic, observable, ascertainable facts. And if an advocate actually got up there and said, you know, Judge, I am arguing and my entire argument rests on the fact that today is July 4th, then the judge would say, well, wait a minute, counsel. No. We have to go back. And they would push on that point and say, that is illogical. That is, you know, don't come into my courtroom with that nonsense. I mean, we would have judges that would laugh at these lawyers for bringing such an absurd argument. And here it is. Before that lawyer even had a word come out of her mouth, the Chief Justice is engaging in the delusion. That, to me, is regardless of how this case comes out, that is a cultural battle that we have currently lost. And we need to stand for truth and say we cannot engage in that nonsense, because what that is signaling to the rest of America is that the left gets to define reality, and that we are willing to argue on a secular humanist playing field, which is conceding reality and observable fact before we even get to the argument. That is concerning. That is unseemly. That is impeachable. That is nonsensical. It is illogical, and it is utterly absurd. As a culture, we have to stand up. Yes, speak truth in love, but speak truth in love. Speak it and say, we are not going to participate in this ridiculous fiction. So I'm very hopeful that we will get to the right outcome in this case. I really am. But that moment of calling a woman Mr. in the highest court of the land, that is a red letter day in America that we need to come back from as a culture. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellison. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are still talking about the arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court in this very important, and I think critically important for America, this case on the trans issue that is before the court. Of basically, does the state have the power to stop the mutilation and the permanent bodily harm done to children? And the answer, of course, to that is yes. But we're talking about how this argument was even set up, where the Solicitor General and the ACLU lawyer, who is a woman but presented as a man, used terminology purposefully in this argument to further their agenda that was totally detached from reality, and that the justices, some of them anyway, that shouldn't have. I mean, we all get that Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sotomayor are going to buy into it. I mean, they're you know, crazy leftists anyway. But for the Chief Justice and Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Barrett, to call this lawyer, who is a woman, Mr., is engaging in leftist false rhetoric. They're participating in a lie. And you even had the purposeful inclusion and framing of the argument with this assumption that gender is assigned at birth rather than an immutable and observable fact. And you had several of the justices, even Alito, who used that term a few times. And this bothers me, because that is an assumption that their argument and the LGBTQ agenda rests in, that we have to reject the premise of their argument first and say, well, wait a minute, we can't even engage in the dialogue of the merit of your argument. We have to go back and reject that premise. The entire argument was based in a fictional world and not in reality. So let's welcome in Todd Starnes, who is the host of the Todd Starnes Show, and you can find all of his great pieces at toddstarnes.com. And Todd, did this bother you as much as it bothered me that you have the highest court in the land and Supreme Court justices who are engaging this argument and willing to participate in the delusion of the left?
Well, I mean, it is the legal system, and anybody can file a lawsuit, I suppose. You know, the issue for me, again, is that we're living in a country where you would have to argue whether or not a 2-year-old or an 8-year-old, you know, should be eligible to have these gender reassignment surgeries. And we know that was in the mindset of the other side, because the attorney representing the ACLU was on CNN the day before the Supreme Court hearing. And that attorney said that children as young as 2 years old have the mental capacity to know whether or not they are transgender, which is simply ludicrous. And if you're a parent out there, you know how ludicrous that statement is. But that's the mindset of the left. And this really is about the deconstruction of gender, which is why you also have a good many gays and lesbians that are opposed to the transgender movement as well, because it impacts their standing, at least this really perverted belief system that the transgender movement has.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that you now have this sort of internal war between the LG and the BTQ, right? You know, so I mean, you have, or maybe it's the LGB against the, you know, the TQ +++, you know, whatever. Because at least, and these people who are calling themselves quote unquote normal gays, which I find just a fascinating, you know, move in a completely oxymoronic phrasing. But, you know, these so-called normal gays who are at least saying, hey, we at least recognize that gender is immutable, and yet they're wanting to draw an arbitrary line at a place other than where God himself and the creator put it for human sexuality, that marriage and procreation is between one man and one woman naturally. You cannot, two women cannot naturally biologically conceive a child, and that's the purpose, of course, of one of the chief purposes of sex. And so as we have continued down this rapid de-escalation and decoupling of human sexuality, the logical conclusion is to get to this utterly absurd, nonsensical place, Todd, that we're now commoditizing children, we're allowing for chemical castration, and we're doing this under the guise of so-called expertise, when even the trans lawyer herself admitted that there isn't really that high of an incidence of suicide, that yes, the people who have been trans or have used these chemical altering drugs have regretted it and have detransitioned later. And so their argument rests upon a total fiction. So after, and I don't know if you listened to the full argument, but, you know, where do you think the Supreme Court in its current composition is going?
Well, I think based on the questions, even, and it's really about the Chief Justice, John Roberts, and I think that he was, I think he was just as disturbed by some of the arguments coming from the ACLU. So I think in this particular instance, the court, at least from my vantage point, my viewpoint, is going to side with the state of Tennessee in this case. We're going to have the Tennessee Attorney General Scrimeti on my national talk show this afternoon, and you know, we'll try to get a good feel from him on how things went. But I think it was a good day yesterday, and I think the state of Tennessee really laid out a good argument on why these kinds of medical mutilations need to be outlawed.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the only logical argument. And I'll be very interested to see what Scrimeti says on your show. And I'm really glad that you're having him because, you know, these cases, we need attorneys general who are willing, like Scrimeti, like our good friend Andrew Bailey, who's the AG of Missouri, you know, like some of these others that are willing to just stand up, Ken Paxton out of Texas, and say, you know, enough is enough. You can't force the law to recognize your arbitrary and capricious illogical conclusions and try to manufacture constitutionalizing child abuse. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. But I'm speaking with Todd Starnes, good friend. He is the host of the Todd Starnes Show. You can find all of his great pieces and news and commentary at toddstarnes.com. And I want to ask you, Todd, as well about the fight right now that is on Capitol Hill over Pete Hegseth and the defense secretary position. There are some reports, of course, the Wall Street Journal reporting yesterday that there may be a couple of other alternatives, including Governor Ron DeSantis out of Florida, for this position because Hegseth may not be able to get enough votes. And even as of this morning, he's saying that, you know, he's going to hang in there. What's your take on where we're at with that particular nominee?
Well, this is a very peculiar case. I've known Pete for a very long time. He and I worked together at Fox. His wife, Jen, happened to be my executive producer, and our offices were right next door to each other. So we knew each other quite well. And the Pete Hegseth that's been described in the national media over the past week or so is not the Pete Hegseth that I knew or that I worked with. And I can tell you I have a very strong aversion to alcohol. And I can tell you not once did I ever smell alcohol on his breath, you know, in the workplace, which is what has been alleged. I think people need to understand, first of all, about Fox News, that they have hired an untold number of leftists who hate the true conservatives there. So I would really take those allegations with a grain of salt. The NBC News story, The New Yorker, The New York Times, all three of them used anonymous sources. And my recommendation to the U.S. senators and the Republican senators especially, Jenna, would be to ignore any allegation made by an anonymous source. These are charges that are meant to destroy a man. And if you don't have the moral courage to stand up and identify yourself when making those charges, I would contend those charges are simply not true. That being said, I do think that Hegseth is going to be okay here. It looked a little dicey, but I think he's going to be able to make it just based on the statements coming from people like John Thune and others. That's not to say he's not out of the woods. But I've been encouraging our audience to call their senators and tell them to stand firm. Jenna, here's my philosophy. I may not like a lot of the choices that President Trump has made for his cabinet, but that doesn't matter. He's got a mandate to govern, and it's pretty black and white for me. If Trump wants the person, Trump needs to get the person.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it is the prerogative of the president. And what I'm seeing in this whole narrative is that they're basically trying to Kavanaugh Pete Hegseth. And, you know, as listeners recall, I mean, when Brett Kavanaugh was initially the nominee, a lot of conservatives, you know, myself included, didn't think that that was the best choice. That wouldn't have been my first choice, but that was the president's choice. And to go through a confirmation hearing and have the senators reject a nominee based on merit or an actual rational reason, that is a very different thing than taking these wild anonymous accusations and forcing someone to withdraw just because you are basically getting maligned in the media and you're getting this smear campaign. Because if we had, and to Trump's credit, he stood by Kavanaugh, and that was the right thing to do. Because if we allow the left or even these rhino Republicans, like Senator Joni Ernst now, who is basically on the warpath to try to get rid of Pete Hegseth and waylay his nomination, then what person would want to accept a nomination knowing there's going to be a lot of just absolutely crazy nonsense that you don't even know where it's coming from? Because how can Hegseth credibly, respond to an allegation if he doesn't even know who his accuser is? I mean, that's part of the reason, Todd, that our founders wrote in the Constitution that we have a right to confront the accusers against us. I mean, at least in the context of a criminal courtroom. But now we have the mainstream media that is the court of public opinion that has absolutely no rules.
Right. And that's just the way it's going to be for conservatives and for Republican presidents. That's the way it's always been, where you got the term Bork, Robert Bork, and the way his character was assassinated. They tried to do it to Brett Kavanaugh, and they're trying to do it right now to Pete Hegseth. And I think this is why it's important. Again, if President Trump wants Pete Hegseth, then we've got to stand up and we've got to defend Hegseth against this mob with the torches. It's just got to stop. And that's the only way it's going to stop is if we stand up and we push back.
Right, right. And, you know, and there is a there is the possibility that if Hegseth knows, okay, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not going to get to the requisite number of senators, that he doesn't actually sit through the confirmation hearings. But then there is this whole idea of recess appointments, which in my opinion, Todd, I think that Trump should utilize those provisions of the Constitution and not have to abide by this so-called spirit of the law when the left is completely dismantling process. And I mean, look at the pardon of Hunter Biden. I mean, Joe Biden doesn't care. The left doesn't care about actual process or the Constitution. And so if Trump can use process to his advantage, why would he not do that?
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's a valid point. And again, when you're looking at these positions, every single one of the nominees that Joe Biden wanted, Joe Biden got. And if you're a Republican and you're voting for someone like a Merrick Garland, you should have no problem voting for any of the nominees that President Trump puts forward. And I think this goes back to the Mitch McConnell days and this idea that the Senate somehow is superior than the executive branch. And I would contend that is very wrongheaded. And at the end of the day, President Trump is going to get his way, even if that means having to primary any sitting Republican senator who stands in the way of his agenda or his nominees.
Yeah, and he has a great track record of primarying even Republicans, even when he wasn't the president, when he was out of office. I mean, just in this last cycle and in the 2024 cycle of the primaries, who stood in the way of his agenda. And, you know, I'm personally actually sad that Representative Bob Good is no longer in Congress. But, you know, that was a takeout by Trump. And I hope that he will have he will want to follow through with that when some of these other senators actually come up for re-election, because we need actually good conservative Republicans, not these people who think that it's their job to, you know, to stick it to Trump for whatever reason. I mean, we all need to get together and say as conservatives, okay, we may not all, you know, like each other in terms of you're my first choice or whatever, but we all need to be on the same team now. And that's where I see, you know, Governor DeSantis doing that very wisely. I see a lot of his supporters. I see people who, you know, didn't necessarily support Trump in the primary who are getting on board and saying there is a mandate. Let's go. Let's push for America first. So Todd Starnes, thank you so much for joining. Really appreciate your comments. And, you know, it's going to be an interesting 2025 for sure. But I hope that Trump and his lawyers will use the process to their advantage and not worry about what the mainstream media says, because at the end of the day, the media only has as much power as Trump gives them. He should just ignore them and go ahead with his mandate anyway. All right, well, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net, and make sure that you tune in tomorrow for On Demand with Jenna Ellis, our exclusive podcast at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.